black and blue. So grab a brain. Just give me a pain, you know. Why don't you grab a brain? Let's put up a brain with you.
You're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show. And who do we have in the studio right now?
Who am I?
Who are you?
Well, let me think about this for a minute. Oh, yeah, I'm Jerry Hanna. That's me.
Who are you, Jerry Hanna? Please identify yourself.
I am the bass player for the Subhumans.
And you're also known as a palindrome, aren't you? Your name is a palindrome.
Yes, Hannah can be spelt the same forwards and backwards, folks.
Just like ex-Vancouver Canuck Gary Lupel. Gary Lupel throwing out a 1980s illusion. Not that we're going back to the 1980s. We're actually going to be going back to July 1st, 1978, aren't we, Jerry Hanna?
Perhaps.
What is your connection to July 1st, 1978, all the way to July 1st, 2005?
Well, July 1st, 1978 was the first ever Subhumans gig at an outdoor festival, anarchist festival, called Anti-Canada Day.
Your band, the Subhumans.
The band, the Subhumans.
The band you play bass for.
That's correct.
And today, July 1st, 2005 is?
Our anniversary, 27th anniversary of that same first gig.
27 years later, the Subhumans are still playing, and you are playing tonight at the Brickyard in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. A Canada Day gig. The Subhumans back, Jerry.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Now, how many other reunions have there been with the Subhumans? Could you please explain? Actually, maybe a bit of background on the band, just briefly. Like, when did you officially break up? When did you leave the band? And what reunions have happened? Because there's been a few.
Yeah, I can't speak for them all, actually, because some of them happened when I haven't been in town for one reason or another, either been sitting in the can or, jail, that is, not the washroom, or out of town. But I know that I left the band in 1981, actually just after our July 1st gig in Victoria. And then I came back, well, after I got out of jail, that's another story, maybe we'll get into that. We did a reunion at the Boys Club. The Subhumans did a reunion at the Boys Club, and I played bass for half the set for that.
Now, when was that? Was that like in the mid-80s?
That would be 88, I believe. It was 88. And then, so that was a little reunion.
And what lineup was there?
That was Mike on guitar, Brian on vocals. I can never remember people's names anymore. It must be that Ativan I'm taking or something like that, you know?
Ativan is nice.
You know who I'm talking about.
You had somebody on drums, right?
Randy Bowman on drums, yeah, and bass, you know.
Ron Allen?
There you go.
I thought you'd be playing bass, so at that reunion.
I played bass for half the set. Ron Allen played bass for the first half of the set. Because they didn't even know I was going to be there. Brian phoned me at the last minute and said, oh, you want to play bass for half the set? So, anyways, that was the first reunion. And then I don't think there was another reunion. I don't know if Brian got anything together or not, but if he did, it was just Brian. That was the last time Mike ever played with the band. Until now. And then Brian got something together, I think, well, okay, and then Brian and I got together again with John Doe from the Scramblers and Dave McAnulty from the Rutabagers.
And the Sarcastic Mannequins.
How could I forget? The Sarcastic Mannequins. Anyways, yeah, and so we did a little tour in 95, and that was a reunion.
And that was really interesting, because that was the oldest punk band in Vancouver, well, generally the oldest punk band aside from Victorian Pork, getting opened by the youngest punk band in Vancouver, DBS, right? That was the big gig. DBS.
Yeah, interesting connection there now, and now... Jesse Gander, who used to be in DBS, is an engineer out at the Hive, and he just engineered our new demo.
Which we'll be playing today on the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And actually, we're speaking here to Jerry Hanna, Jerry from the Subhumans. If anybody has any questions for Jerry, it's 604-822-2478.
Don't make them too difficult.
UBCCITR. But continuing on the reunion tip. Okay, you had the reunion in 1995, and since 1995, what has happened?
Well, then, since 95, I believe Brian got some strange facsimile of the Subhumans together. Basically, I think Brian and some studio musicians went out and did some gigs. And then there was the complication, Vancouver Complication benefit for the food bank that Joe put on. And Brian got a sort of a strange facsimile together. Apparently, they were really good. In fact, you told me they were really good. Anyways, that was another, supposedly, I mean, I'm not sure, the word subhumans gets used fairly, gets thrown around pretty good, but this time, we're talking the real McCoy. It's the original, three original members, myself, Brian, and Mike, plus John Card on drums, who's well-known from SNFU and DOA and the Dead Cats and who knows, who, Personality Crisis, and he's been around, that guy.
And you couldn't get Jim, the second drummer in the Subhumans. Of course, you couldn't get the first drummer.
We tried to get
Dimwit,
Jim.
Because unfortunately, he's dead.
Yeah, we tried to get Dimwit, too, but it just didn't work. But Jim, he just didn't want to do it, so we asked him because we thought it would be fun.
Yes, he had his four horsemen he was doing.
Dimwit, that is, not Jim, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Unfortunately, Dimwit died because he celebrated the record deal that he'd always wanted to get all his life, and so he went out and shot up a little recreational heroin, and unfortunately it killed him.
And tonight, it's going to be the original Subhumans, three-fourths of the original Subhumans at the Brickyard in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. What was the studio musicians that Brian Wimpy Roy took out as the Subhumans a while back?
I'm not sure.
Was that the Subhumanoids? He called it the Subhumanoids?
Maybe he did. I wasn't at the gig. I was working. That's why I couldn't make it to that gig. Otherwise, I would have been playing that night. But
so the last time you played with Mike Graham was 1988?
I think so, yeah.
And the last time you played a full set with Mike Graham would have been...
81.
1981. So really, this is like 1981 all revisited tonight in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. But actually, it's not 1981 all revisited. It's July 1st, 1978 all revisited. Because what happened on July 1st, 1978? You said that was like the first gig of the Subhumans as well?
That was the first gig of the Subhumans, and that was like an open air gig in Stanley Park at a anti Canada Day festival, it was called at that time.
Jerry Hanna of the rock and roll band The Subhumans. We began the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show with the song Model of Stupidity. What can you tell the people about that, aside from the little skip that happened in a record?
Well, that was interesting. I enjoyed that. That's a great thing about vinyl. You never know when the needle's going to jump right off the turntable. Brian wrote that song. And I'm not sure who he was angry with when he wrote that song. Brian was often angry with different individuals and would write a song about it. And I don't know who it was that time, but it's a killer song. It's one of my favorite Subhuman songs of all time, actually. I love the guitar lead in it. It's so cool.
And, of course, we'll be playing it tonight.
Right? We will be playing that song tonight.
At the Brickyard, July
1st. Well, I hope we will. I hope we will. Let's put it that way. It's one of those songs that might get trotted out.
We practiced it, yes. July 1st, 2005. Tonight, the Subhumans back, really, for the first time since 1981, you would say.
Anyway,
officially.
Yes.
Since 1980. What sort of songs did they play in 1988 when you joined for half a set?
They were playing songs from Incorrect Thoughts, the first album, and some of the single stuff. I don't remember exactly, but I know they also played stuff from the second Subhumans album, which was No Wishes, No Prayers, which I didn't play on. I left the band before that album was released. So I think they arranged it so that I would only have to play songs that I knew, that I had played before. So I think Ron Allen played songs, in the first half of the set, there was more of the No Wishes, No Prayers songs there, and then in the second half of the set, it was more like the old Subhuman standards that I knew.
Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans, let's go back to the early days of the Subhumans, 1978, actually pre-1978, John Denver. Was John Denver a turning point in your life for punk rock? Is that why you're playing tonight on July 1st, 2005, because of John Denver?
Well, that might be stretching it a little bit, but John Denver, the turning point, the famous laughable turning point about John Denver was, we started out, Joe and Brian and Dimwit and myself started playing out music when we were pretty young,
Vancouver, British Columbia,
in the holy suburb of North Burnaby, to be specific, where all great things came from. Anyways, we had an electrified psychedelic weirdo band together, and then I heard John Denver. It wasn't just that, but that's the joke. So I'll go along with the joke. Okay, so I went to a John Denver concert, and I was enlightened. I saw Christ, and I realized that we had to get rid of all of our electric gear because it was polluting the world and causing problems. We had to go live on a farm and play acoustic instruments. So the band foolishly followed my advice, and we went and played on the farm and, worked. Well, actually, we played on a farm. We planted virtually nothing, some potatoes, which grew, but... And we played acoustic instruments, and then we decided, oh, that wasn't so great, so we went back electrical again, and it all evolved into these weird punk rock bands, DOA, Subhumans, Victorian Pork, and so forth.
Was that because the rest of the guys saw the Ramones? Did you see the Ramones? It was a famous Ramones gig. Actually, it was probably a famous Ramones gig in every town across North America, but did you see the Ramones gig in Vancouver? Yeah. And how was that connected to the John Denver gig? Was that after the John Denver gig?
That was way after the John Denver gig, you bet. the John Denver thing, yeah, that's really, that's going to become a myth in and of its own. I was away working my butt off on the railroad trying to buy musical equipment while those guys were lounging around attending Ramones gigs
now,
and whatnot.
Who were those guys, in case people are wondering?
Joe Keithley, okay, Mr. Shithead, and Brian and Dimwit, and a guitarist by the name of Simon Werner joined with those guys, and I think they all went to see the Ramones together, but there was other influences too. Simon had been over to England. He had heard all the new punk rock and stuff, come back with a bunch of records, and those guys heard the records and thought, this is really great. This is what we've been waiting for years. Music has stunk so badly in the late 70s, and then suddenly this great music from Britain came out. And then they went and saw the Ramones, and they thought, that was great. I wasn't around. I was in Alberta working on the railroad, and... But I saw, while I was in Alberta, I saw a band in Medicine Hat called the Famine Fruitland Band, who later went on to become The Enemy from Seattle.
Wow, so they were touring the Canadian circuit at that time?
That's right, they were, and it was an amazing show, let me tell you. Yeah, the lead singer was kind of doing a Wendy O. Williams thing with duct tape on her breasts, and it was quite something.
This was like a proto-punk thing, was punk out at that time? Did they know about punk, or were they just doing their own thing?
They knew more about punk than I did, because I'd never heard about punk. I remember coming back to Vancouver, and I had a safety pin holding my shirt together, and those guys, Brian and Joe, and those guys said, hey, that's cool, that's very punk rock, or whatever. I thought, what the hell's punk rock? But... No, Famine Fruitland Band obviously were already plugged into all of that. They probably, probably even heard of the Plasmatics, because I think the Plasmatics were together by then, and Wayne County and all those guys. I think those guys all influenced them, because they were,
that kind of
band.
Were they maybe one of the first punk bands to play Western Canada from the States? That's
pretty
incredible.
Well, I think calling them a punk band might be a little bit of a stretch. They were more like a cross between a hippie punk band, if you can imagine.
I think they were from
thing.
Bellingham, too, the Enemy, weren't they?
I don't know.
Bellingham, Seattle.
Maybe, but then they just hung out. They were in Seattle all the time. That's where they played. They played at the Bird all the time in Seattle.
So you saw them whereabouts in Alberta?
Medicine Hat.
In Medicine Hat, Alberta.
Yeah, yeah.
And were they
Brad Kemp. You know Brad Kemp.
Yeah, Brad Kemp.
Yeah, Brad and I were working on the railroad together. We went away to get money so we could... Well, Brad could never afford a guitar, even though he played guitar. So we went away to get equipment. We went away to make money to buy equipment. And that's where we saw the Famine Fruitland Band with our drunken foreman from the railroad. We all went together.
So how did you get from there into the Subhumans? What were the bands that were in between? Or like, there was the Skulls and the Stiffs. How did it all go from the group of you guys to Subhumans and DOA? What was the route?
The Skulls was Joe, Brian, Ken, and Simon Werner, and the band I formed we all lived in out in Coquitlam.
So you eventually came back from Medicine Hat.
Oh, came back from Medicine Hat. Yeah, Joe said, "Hey, we don't need a keyboard player in the band." I said, "Oh, thanks." That was the end of Stone Crazy, basically, and the beginning of the Skulls, right? So I decided, okay, well, I'll sell my keyboards and I'll buy a bass rig. Well, actually, I only had partial keyboards, so I sold what I had and I bought a bass rig and I formed my own band. What was it called, you wonder? Victorian Pork is the answer. Brad Kent and I formed a band called Victorian Pork with a guy named Dave Noga on vocals. And who was drumming? I think Zippy Pinhead was drumming. And we used to practice over in this dumpy house in Surrey in the basement. I don't know how we got over in Surrey, but anyways, we practiced in the basement. Then, all of a sudden, Joe or Brian or Gimlet or somebody heard all these great stories about Toronto and how there was, you know, 6 or 8 punk rock clubs and everybody was
had
making
been
a fortune.
Had any punk gigs at that time, Vancouver? Because
yeah,
the
couple.
Furies and the Dishrags played.
The Furies, the Dishrags.
The Skulls weren't the first punk band to play gigs. Or the Victorian Pork weren't the first punk band to play a gig,
Have
you played any gigs? It's acknowledged
that
the Furies were the first band to play a punk gig at the Japanese Hall in Vancouver.
Well, I think that's true. But I think the Skulls played a gig before they left at the Legion on West 4th. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing a poster from that. Because the Skulls, when we came back from Toronto, the Skulls didn't exist anymore. They broke up. So I remember seeing a Skulls poster from Vancouver, and I'm pretty sure it was the 4th Avenue Legion. That's where they played. Yeah, in fact, they did for sure. So they played a Vancouver gig.
So you had Victorian Pork going, and then what happened?
We heard these stories about how great Toronto was, and we all had to move there and be successful punk rock band. So we did. We went to Toronto. Of course, it wasn't true at all. There was virtually no clubs left. There
Who
was
went to Toronto?
Brian, myself, Ken Montgomery, Joe Keithley, Simon Werner. And we traveled across. I kind of went as a roadie, expecting to put a band together when I got there. So I traveled with the Skulls there. When we got there, it was dismal. There was like one kind of cramped little weirdo club, and then another club that wasn't even a club. It was a theater. So there was no money at all.
The Shock Theater and the Crash and Burn.
No, the Crash and Burn had closed already. I wish it was still open. That would have been better. No, it was David's. It was this little tiny gay club, basically. Little tiny place. And the Shock Theater, that's right. That was the other one on College Street. And so it was kind of dismal, like you couldn't survive, really. I was about to form a band called, what we were going to be called, the Blades. And then the whole Skulls thing fell apart, and everybody split either to England or back to Vancouver. So I came back to Vancouver. When I got back to Vancouver, I decided to get a band together as quickly as possible. I put an ad in the Georgia Strait. Mike Graham was one of the guitarists that responded to the ad. He came over, we worked together. It
sounded
good.
What had he been doing?
He'd been going to college, going to UBC, in fact, this very place.
Taking architecture?
I believe so.
Is that what he is right now, an architect?
He's a draftsman.
A draftsman?
Yeah.
How did he get into punk?
I'm not sure.
So he responded to your ad?
He responded to my ad, and yeah.
What did the ad say?
It said, probably wanted punk rock guitarist. Don't expect any money. There isn't any. I don't know what it said. So Mike and I formed a band, and then we got Zippy Pinhead on drums and Sid Sick on vocals, and we were called the Stiffs. And then we realized we'd probably get sued by Stiff Records, so we changed our name to the Negatives. And then one day, as it says, and I believe it's Terminal City, interview that Craig Boucher does on us, there was a secret pact formed in the woods of Burnaby Mountain where half of the Subhumans decided, or two-thirds of the Subhumans, which had never really played a gig, that was Dimwit, Brian, and Brad Kent. So Brian and Dimwit came over and talked to Mike and myself and said, "Hey, look, why don't you guys give up on the Negatives? We'll give up on the gig that we're in. We'll form a band together. Let's call it the Subhumans. It's a great name," and that's what we did.
How about the Skulls? How did they turn into DOA? Because both DOA and the Subhumans played on July 1st, 1978. And we're speaking here to Jerry Hanna from the Subhumans, who are playing tonight. Yes, the Subhumans are back, playing their first official gig, really, since 1981. Tonight at the Brickyard, July 1st, 1978 versus July 1st, 2005. How did the Skulls and DOA end up at that gig? Like, what happened there? How did DOA turn into the Skulls?
The Skulls kind of blew up in Toronto because of various problems that were happening there. It was a bad scene there. So Joe came back to Vancouver. Dimwit came back to Vancouver. Brian and Simon were over in England, and eventually they came back. As soon as Joe got out here, back to Vancouver from Toronto, he started looking to form a new band, a new punk rock band, and he got Randy Rampage on bass, and who was the drummer? Can't remember who the drummer was to begin with. That's a good question. Who the hell was the drummer? Anyways, so he formed DOA. That's how DOA came out of the Skulls.
Because at that gig on July 1st, 1978, Chuck Biscuits is drumming for DOA.
Yeah, that's who it was. Yeah, it was Chuck Biscuits. Okay, so DOA... Okay, the Skulls blew up in Toronto. Joe flew back out here. He decided to get a band together right away. He got Randy Rampage on bass, Chuck Biscuits on drums. That's right, and Chuck Biscuits. And that's who drummed with Victorian Pork, actually, not Zippy Pinhead. Chuck, it was me. Victorian Pork, the original Victorian Pork, was myself on bass, Brad Kent on guitar, Dave Noga on vocals, and Chuck Biscuits on drums. That's right.
Whatever happened to Dave?
Dave Noga? I don't know.
Did he ever end up in any other bands after Victorian Pork?
I don't know. I don't think so.
What was Chuck Biscuits like back then, DOA's drummer? Because he was so young in the photos from that July 1st, 1978 game.
He was a great drummer, a really good drummer, like amazing. But, yeah, he was a... He had a bit of an attitude. He was a little kid with an attitude, but he was okay.
But that worked well in DOA.
Yeah, it did, I guess.
And at that gig, Brad Kent was playing guitar for DOA.
Which gig was that?
That was the July 1st, 1978 gig.
Oh, yeah, I think they got a second guitar. Well, you know, DOA, they've had second guitarists and then just Joe on guitar, then they've had a second guitarist, then just Joe on guitar. It kind of keeps going back and forth. So, yeah, you're right. I think Brad was second guitar.
And who else was on the bill? There was Private School, the Subhumans.
Let's compare
bills here, shall we? Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans. July 1st, 1978. Who was on the bill at Canada Day?
Well, there was DOA, Subhumans, Pointed Sticks, I believe, Private School. And I think there was a reggae band, but I'm not sure about that. Yeah, I can't remember who else.
And how about tonight, July 1st, 2005, at the Brickyard? The Subhumans are playing, of course. We're speaking here to Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans. 604-822-2487, UBC, CITR, if you have any subhumanoid-ish type questions. The bill tonight. What's the bill tonight?
Well, assuming that the bill hasn't been changed again, I would say that it is the Subhumans, Wednesday Night Heroes, The Fight United, and A Life of Crime.
That's tonight at the Brickyard in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Drumming for the Subhumans in the early days, of course, was Dimwit. What did you think about Dimwit jumping to the pointed sticks? Because he ended up jumping to the pointed sticks. I heard you on the C-Fox Punk-O-Rama show last night, Jerry, and you asked about the pointed sticks. You said, I kind of like their stuff. You weren't the biggest fan of the pointed sticks. How did you feel about your drummer leaving to the pointed sticks?
I thought it was bizarre. Together. I thought it was bizarre, actually, because he had he was one of the most critical people of the pointed sticks I knew before he joined them, so it was kind of bizarre. But anyways, I mean, we all liked the pointed sticks as people. Like, they were great guys. Yes, it's true. It wasn't quite my cup of tea musically, but, you know, I think...
He really helped the pointed sticks, though, didn't he?
Yeah,
saw him play with the pointed sticks, what did you think? Did it really help the band? I think it did. Well, actually, I never saw him actually play live, but I mean, the pictures of him playing seem pretty wild, like this big lumberjack guy.
Well, you can't really keep Ken down. I mean, he's crazy on drums, totally crazy, but I think, well, I'm sure he helped their sound. One thing he learned with the pointed sticks was to be less busy. We actually talked about that at one time, because when he was in the Subhumans, he was really a busy, busy drummer, always doing something. And he said that he had learned to actually to back off and then be busy when it's important to be busy and not when it's not. But I think he sounded good with them. And the reason he went with the pointed sticks is because Ken's dream was always to actually be able to play music professionally and make a living doing it, which is not a bad aspiration, actually. And he thought he could do it with the pointed sticks.
Jerry, we're now going to play the song World at War. This is from a new Subhumans demo, a brand new Subhumans demo, as recorded by Jesse from DBS. That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's going to be on sale tonight at the gig, too. We're going to be selling this demo EP, but only at our show. So if you want to buy it, you have to come to a show.
Of course, there are old songs being played tonight as well, right?
That's right.
How many new versus old songs are we played tonight at the Brickyard, Jerry Hanna?
We're playing, I think we're playing a total of, well, I don't know. It depends on whether we, how many songs we play tonight. We're not sure how many songs we're going to play, but we're going to play 5 new songs, that's for sure.
World at War we're going to hear, and we're also going to follow it up by some Steppenwolf!
Yeah.
What's the connection between the Subhumans and Steppenwolf?
Well, both bands, it's oddly, this is this interesting thing, both bands... names begin with the letter S, and I think that's, I think there's something there that needs to be looked at deeper. But as well as that, the song you're going to play by Steppenwolf called Move Over, actually the Subhumans used to do a cover of it, amazingly enough, without Mike Graham having ever heard the cover. So there, that's really, yeah, there you go.
But you will not be doing that cover tonight at the Brickyard.
Unfortunately, no.
Or Screwed Up, one of your other great covers.
Unfortunately, no. We're not doing any covers tonight.
This is World at War by the newly reformed Subhumans, live on an Ardwater Human Serviette radio show.
Fudges.
You're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show today, July 1st, 2005, celebrating July 1st, 1978, right back to July 1st, 2005. We have Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans live in the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. Hello, Jerry.
Howdy doody.
The significance again, July 1st, 2005. What does that mean?
That's 27 years ago today that we played our first ever concert.
The Subhumans.
That's correct.
And you're playing tonight as well.
Holy mackerel.
You're really excited about that.
I'm confused.
And July 1st, 1978, of course, was?
Our first gig in Stanley Park.
By the Subhumans. You did not play the songs that we just played, but maybe you could explain a bit about the songs that we did play, because they are related to the Subhumans in some regard. S way.
Yeah, well, that's right. This is the S band thing so far. The first song you heard was called, well, the first song of the two was called World at War. That's a new song off of our demo EP. That's going to be for sale at our show tonight. It's also being farmed out to indie labels, shopping for a label to do an album. And the second song you heard was a song called Move Over by the band Steppenwolf, which we actually used to do a cover of years ago.
And you are Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans, 604-822-247-UBC-CITR. If anybody has any questions for Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans from Vancouver, from North Burnaby.
That's right.
British Columbia, Canada. Jerry, what do you remember about Rock Against Radiation, a big gig that went on at Vanier Park?
Well, that was a gig that actually myself and Brent Taylor and Joe Keithley put together, basically. I mean, there was other people involved, too. I think Phyllis Iverson was involved in it, a few other folks. It was a big outdoor show that we put together to raise awareness about the nuclear threat. And we had guest speakers, including John Trudell from the American Indian Movement, a bunch of other people, and a whole whack of bands. It was one of those few moments where DOA and the Subhumans shared a stage. And the Pointed Sticks, I believe, were at that gig, too. And Reverend Cloud and the Children of God were there, too.
Did DOA and the Subhumans not share stages then?
Not all that often.
Really? Like, how many times did they play together?
Maybe five.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, a movie shot in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, that I'm somewhat obsessed about. Were you around for that? That was like 1980 or so that was shot in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Because remember some sort of story you told me, I think, relating to your girlfriend being stolen by Paul Simonon or something like that.
No, it wasn't Paul Simonon. It was Mick Jones. And it was at a party after the Clash. After the Clash played, where the hell did they play? Commodore? Yeah, it was the Commodore that time. I think it was the Commodore. Anyways, yeah, the Clash came to a party after the gig, and he didn't exactly steal her. He was basically chatting her up, though. She was gone. Him and her were gone for quite a while up this dark staircase, I noticed. But anyways, yeah, we had actually driven him around the day before that in her little Vauxhall. Joe Strummer, Paul Simonon, and Mick wasn't actually in the car. It was Joe Strummer and Paul Simonon were in the back seat of this Vauxhall, and we were drinking this big jug of wine as we were driving. Now, that was after we'd played the the soccer game at Balaclava here in or out in Kitts. We had a soccer game with the Clash. It was we called ourselves Warehouse United. It was a bunch of punk rock bands, and the Clash were the Clash and Road Crew. They whooped us, of course, being English and that.
It was nice that they wanted to play with you. Is that how they met you?
I think they just wanted to humiliate us.
But still, though, at least they hung out with the local punks, eh?
They did hang out with us. Yeah, well, back then everything was very cordial. It's funny, the next gig they played, it was exactly the opposite. People were spray-painting their bus and egging it, and yeah, it was pretty bizarre. Everything turned right around.
You guys didn't play with the Clash. I think that was like the Dish Rags that played with the Clash, right? The Dish Rags and Blow Diddley.
I don't...
And Blow Diddley. I think people really did think he blew.
I don't know about Blow Diddley. I can't comment on that, but I know DOA played with the Clash. They opened for them at the Gardens.
How about yourself, though, in the Subhumans? Which bands did you guys back up? You played with the Avengers, didn't you?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like in Vancouver, I'm thinking of early gigs, like playing with the Avengers. They're incredible, eh? What
they played with the Avengers and the Dills and Dead Kennedys and all, you know, a whole bunch of West Coast bands.
What was the biggest...
What did I think of the Avengers? I thought they were a great band. I thought the Dills were a great band, too. Unfortunately, they ended up kind of going, I don't know what. They lost their fire, I'd say. They were really, really great when they first started out, and then they kind of lost their fire.
And I mentioned Dish Rags. Did Mike Graham help the Dish Rags in some respect? Like, was he friends with the Dish Rags?
I think he might have been. I'm not sure. I don't remember that too well. But and as far as bigger bands go, we played with the Jam. And I can't remember who else we opened for at the Commodore and a few other places. Few bigger. We were supposed to open for the Specials. But then Drew Burns of the Commodore realized that he had banned us from the Commodore. So at the last minute, he cut us from the bill. And then the Specials threatened to quit the show. But then we talked and we decided they should go ahead. And so they got some other opening band, and that was that. But we were all ready to open for them. We had our gear out in the alley and everything.
That was very nice of them.
Yeah, they were cool.
To have solidarity with you.
Yeah, they were very cool. They were very nice guys.
What about the Jam? What was that like? What were they like?
They weren't nice guys.
Why, did you try to talk to them?
No, they wouldn't talk to you. They wouldn't even. They had this huge light show. They wouldn't even let us use a quarter of it. We basically had light bulbs on us. Like 100 watt light bulbs when we came out. And then when they came out, boom, bosh. You know, huge... Big, bright white and yellow cans, you know, it was quite something. But, yeah, what? They wouldn't, they were not friendly at all.
How did they go over? How did people like them?
I think people liked them. I can't remember the show that well.
How did they like you guys? Like, how did their crowd like you guys?
Well, some of the crowd was ours. So, you know, I think it was a good show. I think we did fine, as far as I remember.
Some of your favorite shows, though, Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans, are ones which fucking is involved. Did people really fuck on stage at SFU when you played at SFU?
Well, I don't know that was one of my favorite shows, actually, but yes, people did have sex on stage at SFU. Yeah, that was when somebody offered them a case of beer if they would have sex, and they said, yeah, and whipped off all their clothes. I can't remember how that all came about, but it was quite something to see these naked people on stage having sex. Yeah.
Which will happen tonight,
yeah,
at
probably.
The Brickyard.
Actually, probably, I think there's a few people lined up ready to do that.
The Subhumans playing, first time since 1981. Is it wrong for me to say that first time since 81? First time really officially since 1981, right? Like the first officially postered gig that you've
been involved
with.
How about this? The first time with more than two original members in it since 1981.
Well, you did have that other original member type thing that was together, right? With Mike Graham in 1988, right?
Yes.
You said.
So that was
officially posted with you involved.
That's right.
From like a month before. That was kind of last minute thing
I stepped onto the stage, yeah.
What do you remember about recording with Bob Rock? Because we began an Artwork of Human Survey radio show with the song...
Yeah, Model of Stupidity.
But that wasn't done with Bob Rock, was it?
It wasn't. It was done with Dick Drake, yeah.
What do you remember about recording with Bob Rock?
He was a really good engineer. Something's flashing over there on your panel, you know.
That means we have a phone caller. And caller, are you there? Hello, caller, are you there? Hello, caller. Hello, caller. Hello, caller.
Can you tell me when you played with the Jam?
Hold on. Are you still there, caller?
Hello.
Wait a second, caller. Hold on, William Jams.
You read my mind.
Okay, go ahead, William Jams.
Can you tell me when you played with the Jam, was that at the Carousel Arena?
No, it was at the Commodore.
Oh, okay, because I was lucky enough to meet them as well. I found them to be really nice, but I'm sorry that you got shafted with some light bulbs.
Yeah, well, they didn't like us, I don't think.
When was the gig that you saw, William?
That was the Carousel Arena, and they were really nice. As a matter of fact, I told Nardo about this before. There was it was about 7 days apart between when the Clash and the Jam both played the Carousel Arena, and Paul Weller left some graffiti behind one of the doors in the dressing room saying, "Hey, Joe Strummer, keep the faith, Paul Weller." And so, and I think this time there's supposed to be this big rivalry and the publicity about them hating each other, but obviously that wasn't the case.
And you forgot to take a photo of that graffiti, right?
No, I do have a photo of their graffiti, Mr. Nardwar.
Wow! I'm looking forward to seeing that one day, William Jams.
Oh, and I have another question for Mr. Hanna.
What's that?
If you have kids, did you name them Otto and Ada?
No. I don't have kids. I have a dog and a cat, though.
Okay, well, you got to name them some palindrome kind of name, you know.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, you know, because I had my tubes tied.
Well, thank you very much for phoning in, William Jams. That's fascinating about Paul Weller being friendly to Joe Strummer.
Who would have thunk?
Well, thanks very much, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. That's great. Happy Canada Day.
Oh, thank you.
The Subhumans are back together playing tonight.
Since 1981.
But really, first gig since 1978, because that was their first gig 27 years ago.
Holy crap.
And doot doodle hoot doo. Okay, see ya. Bye. And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, the Nardwater Human Survey Radio Show. That was William Jams, local photographer, phoning in to speak to Jerry Hanna from the Subhumans, who are playing tonight at the Brickyard in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, 604-822-247, 604-UBC-CITR. If you have any questions for Jerry Hanna. Jerry, Bob Rock, what was it like recording with Bob Rock? Was that the first recordings that you did? No, it wasn't the first recordings
that you did. No, the first recordings that we did were with... the engineer was Dick Drake, and the studio was Ocean Sound, and that was over in North Van at that time. And that was Death of the Sicoids and O Canada, the first single. Bob Rock did the EP, which was the second record we ever did, which had Slave to My Dick, Fuck You, Inquisition Day, and Death Was Too Kind on it. And Bob Rock was a very, very good engineer. I think he gave us one of the best sounds yet at that point to have come out of the Vancouver punk scene.
Did you think about recording with them after that? Or was he just too expensive?
I never really thought about it again. I mean, we probably thought about it back in those days again, but I don't know why it didn't happen. I mean, you know, the thing is that we would kind of get pushed wherever the record label was willing to spend the money. So, I didn't actually want to go back to Ocean Sound after we recorded the single there, because I wasn't really happy with the sound of the single, the first single. But lo and behold, Incorrect Thoughts was recorded at Ocean Sound again with Dick Drake, so we're right back at square one. There's a point I keep bringing up with the rest of the band ad nauseum.
Jerry, when was your first USA gig with the Subhumans? When did you first play?
Gee, I don't know. It would have been the first year we were together, because I think we went down and played Seattle almost right away.
And you were quite popular in Seattle, like more popular than DOA, right, in Seattle?
Well, that's a matter of debate, but they seem to like us. Yeah, well, Joe had some incident in Seattle. I can't remember what happened there, but they got mad at him at the bird. He did something. Maybe he gave them the bird. I don't know. And so then the Subhumans kind of were maybe more popular. I'm not sure. But, you know, I think that we concentrated a little bit more on Seattle than DOA did. DOA concentrated a lot on San Francisco and LA, but mostly San Francisco, because DOA played at the Mabuhay Gardens really early on in their career. And they kept going back there, which actually was a real smart move on their part, because the Mabuhay Gardens had connections to all over the other, you know, the rest of the country, rest of the USA. So it got them quite a bit of notoriety right off the bat. And, I think the first gig was Seattle, and then we did a West Coast tour down to, then we went to San Francisco, so we did Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and then the next time I think we actually went to LA and San Diego.
Now, were you bringing a new type of music? Were you bringing the hardcore sound? Because DOA and the Subhumans kind of brought a new sound, like the hardcore sound. It wasn't like the 1977 straight-up punk rock sound, was it? Were you like the only bands on the bill that would have this sort of sound? How were you received with this new Northwest punk sound?
You mean in the States or on the West Coast of the U.S.?
Yeah,
or?
Playing other towns and stuff.
Well, I think the Avengers had a fairly similar sound to us, and... Yeah, Dead Kennedys didn't. Dead Kennedys had their own very unique sound. I think the sound was a lot more... there was more variety in sound back then.
Did anybody yell to you, play faster? Or did you ever think you weren't playing fast enough?
No. No, we actually played faster back then, probably. We did a lot of fast songs, whereas we do probably... Well, we're doing fairly fast songs now, but we did fairly fast songs back then. That whole thrash sound hadn't even been invented yet, except for, as I said last night on C-Fox, the Plasmatics were doing that. They were actually doing that thrash song. I used to think Black Flag were the first punk band to really invent that thrash doo-da, 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 doo-da sound, right? You know? But in fact, the Plasmatics were doing that sound long before Black Flag were. So, but that sound hadn't become really big on the West Coast. So it was still kind of a Sex Pistol-y, damn clashy sound, you know, combined with a Ramones-y sound. I think your phone's ringing again.
Caller, are you there?
I am here, Nardwar.
Go ahead to Jerry Hanna, Joe.
Jerry Hanna, I was wondering, your film Useless, is it available anywhere by Glenn Sanford?
It's available from Glenn Sanford, I believe.
Oh, it's not like you can't go and pick it up anywhere?
I don't think so. I wish you could, but I don't think so. I think you can probably contact him at, I think it's glennett@telusnet.com or .ca or something like that. You know, what I do is go on the internet and... put in quotation marks useless and see what, and just go on a search engine and see what comes up. You might get a link somewhere, I don't know. But yeah, it should be available. I keep urging Glenn to get it on the documentary channel, but he hasn't done it yet. I don't know why, because it'd be a good short.
How long is it?
It's about 33 minutes, I think, or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it'd work perfect with one of their features, because they're usually about an hour and a half, and then they put a short in to fill out the 2 hours.
Is it about you getting arrested, or...
It's about me. It's about me in general.
There's a bit of Subhumans in there too.
There's even Subhumans.
And Joe, the Subhumans are playing tonight. Tonight.
Where?
At the Brickyard tonight. The first official Subhumans kind of show since 1981. Jerry, you're playing tonight. Maybe you want to tell Joe the information here.
Yeah, if he hasn't heard already, but yeah, it's it's three of the four original members tonight. It's myself, Brian Goebel, Mike Graham, and then John Card is on drums.
Nice. Yeah. Will you guys be playing Fuck You or?
That depends on the audience. Are you going to be in the audience?
I'll try to be there.
Yes. Well, then that will depend on you.
Well, thank you very much for phoning in, Joe, and we'll get a bit more into the Squamish Five and Jerry's arrest right after these messages from the Subhumans. Well, thanks very much, caller, and Joe, and doo-doo-loo-doo.
Bird-poo.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We're going to play another song that you might be playing tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what song is that? Celebrity. Celebrity. Are you playing that tonight?
I believe so. Again, that depends on the audience, Nardwar. But that's a Mike Graham song.
And then we're going to follow that up, I think, or maybe we won't follow it up. We might play some Sebado afterwards, just because you like the Sebado. Another S-band. You're not stuck in 77,
like,
are you?
I like them S-bands. Stooges, Sebado, Stereolab, you name them. Subhumans, all great bands.
And what's interesting, Lou Barlow of Sebado was in Dinosaur Jr., who are coming to Vancouver Reunited. He also was in a seminal hardcore band called Deep Wound. Deep Wound from Connecticut. Deep Wound. And they're also featured in a book, American Hardcore. If people are listening to this interview and wondering all about hardcore and stuff, there's a great book, American Hardcore, that features many sort of references to the subhumans, a couple chapters on the subhumans. There's also a reference to Lou Barlow's first punk hardcore band, Deep Wound. But right now, on the Nerdwater Human Serviette radio show, this is the Subhumans with Celebrity. What do you want to say about this song? Anything particular about this particular song at all, Jerry Hanna?
Yeah, I think it's a great song. I think Mike is a great songwriter, and this is a shit-hot song.
On CITR, followed up by Shebido. What about the Shebido song?
It's kind of a depressing song I'd like to listen to when I'm, you know, in my normal headspace, staring out the window, wondering about whether or not life is worth living.
Thank you. Yeah, you're still listening to CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, 604-822-2487, 604-UBC-CITR. If you have any questions for Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans, who are reunited and playing tonight at the Brickyard here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Jerry Hanna, what did we hear in that last little snippet?
Well, we heard a song off our new demo album, also, well, demo/EP, called Celebrity, a song by Mike Graham. That's going to be for sale at our gig tonight at the Brickyard, the demo that is. And then the other song we heard... That we just ended with was a song by a band called Sebado called Dreams.
One of your favorites. You love that album, right?
I do like that album a lot, yeah. That's a good album.
You've been quite an influence on people, Jerry Hanna. Do you know the band Codeine at all?
No.
The band Codeine, they were on Sub Pop, a really cool band, and I found in their discography that they cover one of your songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sure Looks That Way.
Oh, you know, really?
Do you know the song Sure?
Oh, I do know.
What's
the
background on the song Sure Looks That Way, Jerry Hanna?
That was off a... That song was off a tape that I released when I was in prison called Songs from Underground, and it was a kind of a folky, folk rock... deal that I did, and it the lyrics before that are "We're dead, I know it sure looks that way to me." So it's a very happy song.
Well, what's really interesting is the influence you've had, Jerry Hanna, with the Subhumans and your other music getting covered by Codeine there. This was actually recorded for a Peel session in 1994, Peel session.
I never got a royalty off of it.
Sure Looks That Way. This is the band Codeine speaking. This is a cover of a song by Jerry Hanna, previously of the Vancouver, BC band The Subhumans. Sure Looks That Way is from a cassette of his songs called... Songs from the Underground, recorded while he was in prison, I think around 1985.
When the CD was recorded, or the cassette, you mean?
Yes.
Original, yeah. You know, I had all kinds of trouble about that. The prison freaked out when they found out that... Well, they read an article by Tom Harrison in the Sun or the Province, I can't remember which one, and there was a picture of me... And they didn't know about this, or at least they claimed not to. I sent it out through the proper channels to say, hey, I'd like to send this tape out with my mom. Is that okay? Oh, yeah. And so then the tape got sold 900 copies, and there was write-ups about it. So they freaked out. I came back from going to school one day at prison, and they had cleaned out my entire cell. They had confiscated all my tapes. They confiscated the Musicians Association 4-track. Tape machine in my cell, and I was being watched carefully and so forth and so on. Then they realized they didn't really have a leg to stand on because they let the tape out through the proper channels. They never asked me if I was going to sell it commercially or anything. So.
And it made its way to Codeine, the band Codeine, and into a Peel session.
Yeah, amazing.
Jerry Hanna, the band Overkill is coming to Vancouver. Do you know that?
Is that right?
The band Overkill is coming to Vancouver September 15th to Richards on Richards.
Amazing.
What is the connection between Jerry Hanna and the band Overkill?
You're amazing that you're able to spring these things up, pop these things up that quickly. I must say, you are a true professional. You know?
Oh, I welcome you to the Nerd World of Human Serviette Radio Show anytime. Actually, it's your fourth time in the Nerd World of Human Serviette Radio Show. Thank you very much,
and
Jerry
Hanna. You
still
surprise me. Okay, well, that's an interesting... I'm kind of dumbfounded. I have to think about this one, chew on this one for a little while.
Because tonight your band, the Subhumans, are playing... For the first time since, well, let's say 1978. Let's just say, well, not really, but you're playing a gig tonight at the Brickyard. One of the great songs that I think Joe the Caller was asking about was the song, Fuck You, basically the Canadian national anthem. And the band Overkill appropriated the song, Fuck You?
I think stole the song is the correct terminology. The band Overkill, particularly their lead singer, Bobby Ellsworth, is the responsible individual, I'd say. Yeah, he stole the song. They titled an album after it. They called their album Fuck You and then some, and they had two versions of my song, Fuck You, on their album, and they never credited the Subhumans, and they never gave me a nickel in royalties until just recently when I actually found a lawyer who would go after them. And still I haven't got all the royalties. I've never gotten an apology from the band or Bobby Ellsworth or their manager or anybody. I haven't got a nickel from the band, but the labels that the band has sold the record on have been paying me off for the most part, including Alice Cooper's label, Eagle Rock. But one label, the label actually that sold the largest amount of my song, what are they called, Sanctuary, that's the name of the label. They're a European distributor and stuff. They haven't given me a nickel. They owe me over $6,000, and they're just humming and hawing and dragging their feet and pretending they don't know what I'm talking about and so forth and so on. They stole my stuff. It's like coming into my house and stealing my stuff. They took the song Fuck You. They made money off of it, and they never paid me nothing.
Do you know how much they sold of that album, or how much they've sold? Like, how can you tell
there's
how much
various,
they sold?
Well, because the lawyers checked into it, various people have checked into it for me, including Jello and other people who have been interested in this, and Ian MacKay and people like that. They have sold anywhere between, I don't know, if you're, are you including Europe? Yeah, I would say anywhere.
Worldwide.
Yeah, I would say anywhere between 60 to 100,000 copies of it worldwide. That's, 100,000 probably is... That's too high.
How much money would that be for you if they paid you?
Well, they've already paid me some of it. Like I said,
but that was only recently. Right?
Yeah, after we went after them, after the lawyer sent them a letter saying, "Hey, this is Jerry Hanna's property, and you know it." Well, there was no argument there. They sent the royalties, right? Except for this one company, Sanctuary, that still hasn't sent the royalties. And there's, of course, been precedent set because the other two record labels said, yeah, okay, we can't argue with this. This is this guy's song, obviously, right? But this record label, Sanctuary, they still want to drag their feet and be irresponsible and dishonest about it. And like I said, the band is actually claiming on their website that they are like one of the true bands that remains true to their causes, and you know, like they're very honest and not like the other heavy metal bands that are liars. And in fact, these guys, like, you know, have, like I said, they've never apologized for taking this song and not giving me any credit.
September 15th at Richards on Richards, Overkill.
Actually, interestingly enough, we're going to be in town as well around that time. In fact, we have a gig scheduled for Mesa Luna on September 14th. I don't know whether it's still going ahead
or not.
Maybe
you could get on the Overkill bill.
Well, I'm going to...
Maybe
I'm
some humans could open up for Overkill.
Well, could you arrange that, Nightmare? Do you think you could get me on the guest list as Bobby Ellsworth's guest?
Well, look into that, Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans. Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans playing tonight at the Brickyard. Again, a very exciting day. July 1st, 2005. July 1st, 1978 was your very first gig in the Subhumans, and you're playing tonight at the Brickyard with the Wednesday Night Heroes, too.
That's right.
The Wednesday Night Heroes from Edmonton, Alberta. Jerry Hanna, who were the Squamish Five?
Well, I prefer to call them Direct Action, actually. Squamish Five was the media name because we were arrested in near Squamish, actually, not in Squamish. Direct Action was a group that I was in, basically an urban guerrilla group. We were armed and dangerous, I guess, according to the police anyways. I guess we were kind of dangerous, depending on who you were. And we decided to take action against political targets that we felt were unacceptable, and those targets included a factory in Toronto that manufactured parts for the cruise missile, which was an American nuclear weapon, a first strike weapon that threatened the balance of power between the Soviet Union and the U.S. at that time. And we opposed this nuclear arms race, and we were tired of nothing really being done about it, so we took action ourselves against it. And we were involved in stopping environmental projects that we felt weren't, the people had said clearly they didn't want, but the government went ahead with them anyway. So the Chikai-Dunsmuir power line over on Vancouver Island was bombed as well by the group. And the group was also partially involved in attacking some Red Hot Video stores, some porn outlets that sold, at that time they were selling snuff movies and kiddie porn and basically you name it, any kind of brutal stuff that people were willing to buy. So that's who we were. I wasn't involved in all of the action. I started out wanting to just be a support person, but then things happened and I had to go underground and become a full-fledged member of the group, and we were plotting a robbery to finance these operations, and we got busted in the process of plotting the robbery.
So what exactly did you go to jail for? Planning to rob a bank?
Well, that was the main charge. I got 10 years for that.
And you didn't actually...
It wasn't a bank. It was a Brinks guard coming out of a Woolco store with a bag of money.
And were you actually going to do this robbery, or how did they know you were planning to actually do this?
They had wiretaps. They had a two bugs in the house, so they heard all of our conversations for 3 months. They heard every conversation.
How did they know that you would go through with it? Like, could it
be decided? No, it was obvious. It was obvious that we were going through with it. There was no doubt about it.
You think you were going to go through with it?
Oh, definitely. There was no doubt about it. Unless I, you know, unless something happened, unless I broke a leg or something like that. Yeah, we were going ahead with it.
Did they try to link you to any of the bombings? Because you didn't participate in any of the bombings,
did you? They did it first. Yeah, they did it first. The Toronto cops tried to scare me and, you know, say that I was involved in the Lytton bombing. That strange sound you hear isn't a mouse, it's my chair. Anyways, yeah, they tried to link me to the Lytton bombing, but I wasn't involved in it, so.
How hard would it be for them to link you to the Lytton bombing? Like, for instance, can't they frame anybody if they want to frame anybody?
Well, they could have framed me, but I think they didn't need to frame me. They had Anne and Julie and Brent on it for sure. They had them, you know, they had them cold, so they could put those guys away for that. They had me on other stuff that they knew they could put me away on. And then Doug, they knew they had Doug on the bombing on Vancouver Island of the Chi-Kai Dunsmuir power station, which wasn't functioning, by the way. Often people think, oh my God, how could they blow up a power line? All those people were getting heart surgery at that time, suddenly a blackout. Well, it wasn't a functioning power line, and there was nobody there. There was no chance of anybody being injured or anything, because there was not a soul there. It was basically property damage on a massive scale.
Jerry, how did you get from the subhumans to direct action?
Subhumans. Well, that's an interesting thing. I'm not even sure myself. I met Julie Belmas, for one thing. That had something to do with it.
Because you were playing in a band, doing gigs?
Yeah. Yeah, and then, well, I left the punk rock scene. I quit the Subhumans in 1981.
No, why did you quit?
Well, there was a few reasons. One of the reasons why I quit the Subhumans, per se, was because we just came back from a really long tour that totally burned me out. It was supposed to be a six-week tour or something like that. It was a three-month tour, and I had just met this woman that I'd fallen in love with. I wanted to be with her. I didn't want to be out on tour in a smelly van, you know, playing places like the National and in Calgary for 2 weeks and that sort of thing. But the reason both Julie and I basically left the punk rock scene and went and moved out of Vancouver, I mean, the reason we left the punk rock scene, let's not talk about why we moved out of Vancouver, because it had more to do with we wanted to be in a different place. We wanted to be in the Rocky Mountains. But the reason we left the punk scene was because, A, we were tired of the music industry, people with huge egos that produced very little for their, like certain promoters, people like that. So that's part of the reason. I just had enough of it. I had enough of it, the whole music industry. But another thing was the psychotic violence at the gigs. That was just turning me right off. You know, the whole punk rock was supposed to be all about a bunch of people who were misfits from mainstream society. They didn't fit in mainstream society, rightfully so. Why would anybody want to fit in mainstream society? So it was about building your own community. So punk rock was forming its own community. And then suddenly we had these psychos in the middle of this community that were preying on their own family, you know? And it reached a point in 81 where I just had enough of it, you know? It was really bad in L.A. There was, like, you know, fights every night in the mosh pit in L.A., and then I came back to Vancouver, and it was the same thing up here, you know, with certain individuals in this scene just completely wrecking it because they were just, they thought punk rock was all about smashing somebody's head in, not about building a community.
That made you leave the Subhumans. How did you end up with direct action? Like, you completely changed your identity. How hard was it to change your identity in the 1980s? Didn't you get some fake IDs? How hard was it to become another person in the 1980s?
It was a lot easier then than it would be now. It was still tough, though. I didn't actually get the identities. The identities already existed before I joined the group. Like, there was already a bunch of fake ID floating around.
And the group was comprised of punk rockers as well? Other punk
rockers? No, just Julie was the only real other punk rocker, but Brent Taylor had been involved in the Vancouver punk scene a lot, done a lot of stuff, but I wouldn't really call him a punk rocker.
So did Julie
exactly.
Say, hey, there's this group
Julie
of people that we should
rocker.
Check out, and then that's how he got all hooked up with them?
Julie started, well, I knew Brent. I knew Brent from way back, but Julie started really getting involved with the issues that Brent and Ann and Doug were involved in, and then she started helping them out, doing support work and stuff like that, and I basically followed Julie into it. You know, Julie started it, and at one point she said to me, if you really believed in this revolutionary stuff, you'd be going out and helping us do this stuff. And I guess I was guilted out by that or something, so I sold my musical instruments and bought an assault rifle over the counter at Lever Arms.
Now, what's wrong with IGA? You guys wanted to do something with the IGA, didn't you? Or Direct Action did something with IGA.
Yeah, I can't really talk about that too much because I don't know the whole story about that. There's nothing wrong with IGA. I think people were looking for places to get cash from, basically, quickly, and maybe IGA was one of those places.
And then you found some dynamite by chance?
Mm-hmm.
You guys found the dynamite by chance? Was that easy to find, dynamite?
Yeah, well, actually, these bears loaded it in our pickup truck for us. It was amazing.
Ba-boom! And you are Jerry Hanna from the rock and roll band of Subhumans playing tonight at the Brickyard. What was the reaction to you getting in jail or you getting sentenced, etc., from the punk community?
Well, there was a lot of support. People were very supportive. DOA did a series of benefits for us to raise money for our defense committee. And there was other bands, too. Lots of bands did a bunch of stuff. But, you know, we had been doing that stuff. A bunch of bands had been doing that stuff before we got busted, too. We used to do gigs called Rock for Prisons, where we raised money for prisoners' rights groups, you know. And there was all kinds of bands doing that stuff. Like, I still have a poster somewhere of a benefit for Rock for Prisons and who was in it, AKA and... Subhumans, of course, and the Rabid, and there was like six or eight bands on the bill, you know, raising money for prisoners' rights groups. So when I got busted, I mean, this wasn't something new for bands in Vancouver to do benefits for different political causes. Actually, it was a pretty common thing. It happened a lot.
And so. Benefits happened all over, right, didn't they? Like in the United States of America, too, and you wrote for MRR Fanzine. They printed a lot of your letters from jail.
Yeah, actually, I had a column going there for a while, yeah.
Did you ever think that you were censored at all? Like, how come the jail let your column be published?
They couldn't really stop it, according to the Constitution. They weren't allowed to. It's freedom of speech, right? I wasn't advocating that people go out and use violence or anything like that. I was just basically talking about the political issues of the day and what I thought about them and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, you know, constitutionally you have a right to talk about your feelings and your political beliefs.
It was interesting the reaction of some of the Maximum Rock and Roll readers. One of them wrote in to say, then we have DOA supporting these people. Maximum Rock and Roll has one of the guys from the Five as one of their helpers. These people have seen too many revolutionary peasant uprising films.
Mm.
That was one punk. Mm-hmm. And then another write-up was, the press has had a field day with the prosecution's twisted portrait of us, you were quoted as saying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the articles, I think, was in the Vancouver Province. The anger of punk rock was not enough for Julie Belmas. So, she laid down her guitar, picked up a gun, and started reading books with such titles as How Terrorists Kill. She practiced shooting targets with human pictures drawn on them, talked about how it would be great action to blow up military planes, and real meat to blow up an icebreaker named after cancer victim Terry Fox. She rehearsed robbing an armored car guard and was the voice that warned that a van load of explosives was due to go off at a Lytton plant in Toronto. This was the media's portrayal. Was it all like that?
No, but you know, there was plenty of that stuff. I mean, they made up lies about us, too. They said that we trained in Syria and Lebanon and that we had cells all over Vancouver Island just waiting to take over BC. The lies were astounding and the sensationalist hype was astounding.
Did you read a book called...
Who wrote that, by the way?
I'm not sure. Did you read
it? Sounds like that guy that used to write over in the North Shore News. What's that guy's name?
Doug Collins.
There you go.
It sounds like
Doug Collins writing. That's his style.
I think it was the Vancouver Province.
Oh, is that right?
Shocked me about
because he wrote an article like that just after Julie was sentenced. He wrote an article like that too, basically, you know, just this total sensation was like, this woman is just so evil and screwed up, but I kind of like to have sex with her, but she's so evil and screwed up, but I kind of like to have sex with her. And that's how the article kind of went. I mean, he didn't say he wanted to have sex with her. He talked about her cutesy walk and, you know.
Did she read a book called How Terrorists Kill?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Were you bugged? You said you were bugged, right?
Yeah.
That led to some interesting stuff. You thought that they thought you were from Syria?
No, they never thought we were from Syria for a minute. No, that's what the media said.
No, but didn't they hear something in your bugging that made them think that you were going somewhere when you were saying, like, we're going to Hornby Island, and they thought you said, we're going to somewhere else or something?
No, I don't remember that. No.
Jerry Hanna, 27, bass player and writer of lyrics such as Fuck You, for a band known as the Subhumans, once banned from the Commodore in Vancouver because of its obnoxious fans, was sentenced to 10 years by the same judge. His frustration led him first to the angry music of the punk movement and fellow Burnaby North High School student Rick Zimmerman remembers he always had some band or other going.
Really? I thought the comment from Rick Zimmerman was that I was always into some kind of weird sci-fi or something. Anyways, I guess Rick Zimmerman had a whole bunch of different comments.
So they did go to your high school and try to interview people and try to get a perspective on it?
I think they tried to find some people in my neighborhood who was an acquaintance with or whatever.
One thing that surprised me also was Steve Albini, you know, legendary Steve Albini, the recording dude, probably that recorded maybe even some Sebado. He actually wrote, "For all their trouble, what the five have accomplished? Well, they brought about a big-ass police crackdown. Search and seizure restrictions have been relaxed. Probable cause limitations dropped, and near martial law police state has developed in Canada. All the causes the five were championing, environmentalist, feminist, and anti-nuclear, have fallen into public disapproval by association. Thanks a lot, guys. You've been a big help." This was the punk reaction, that people were for your causes, but they didn't like what you brought to the cause.
Some of them. There was lots of people that actually supported the actions, too. But, you know, whatever.
Did you ever meet the jury at all? Was there a jury?
Oh, I saw the jury. Yeah, we saw the jury.
Who were they?
Oh, just people that were picked from New Westminster area. That's where the trial happened.
Like, what were they asked? You know, if they were asked if they like punk rock and music or anything like that?
Well, one of the guys actually was a Subhumans fan. They determined that, but the prosecution determined that. Have you ever heard of Jerry, any of the accused prior to this day that you've set eyes upon them? And one guy said, "Well, yeah, actually, I know Jerry Hanna. Yeah, I'm a big Subhumans fan." Out he went.
Damn.
Prosecution got rid of him in a hurry.
Now, who was Doug, and how did he get off, and you ended up spending 10 years, or being sentenced for 10 years?
Well, Doug didn't get off. He got 6 years. And he did every day of them.
Okay.
Right. He did rate to maximum, you know, to the longest they could keep him in there, mandatory supervision. So, no, he didn't get off. He only got charged with one major charge, which was bombing the Chikai Dunsmuir substation on Vancouver Island, which is all they really had evidence on for, whereas they had evidence on me for plotting the robbery. Doug wasn't involved in that, so they couldn't charge him with it.
How much were the legal bills?
Oh, I don't know. They were enormous.
Are you still paying them to this day?
No. Most of it was legal aid, but some of it wasn't.
How long did it take to pay them back, like after you got out of jail?
Oh, I never had to pay them back. There was funds raised on our behalf by two different support groups. One was called the Free to Five Defense Committee, and the other one was called the Free to Five Support Group. It was actually a split between the two, but that's neither here nor there. But anyways, they raised a lot of money, and they paid off the bills.
Jerry, you mentioned last night on CFOX that you got some stretched orifices in jail.
Yeah, that was a joke.
What was the relationship between stretched orifices and punkers in jail? Was there a lot of stretch orificing going on?
Actually, very little. Canadian jails, fortunately, have... fortunately, depending on what your persuasion is, your gender preferences are. But there's actually very little rape in Canadian prisons that I saw, anyways. In fact, none that I saw. There was, consensual sex going on between a few people. But there wasn't anybody, forcing themselves on you in the prisons that I saw. Now, I hear things are changing a little bit in Canadian prisons, and definitely in American prisons, things are a lot different.
Jerry, winding up here, you once told me a story, but I can't totally remember the end of it, involving a speedboat and a bigot.
Oh, God. You know, we're running out of time, Nardwar. This is a long story to be starting at 5 to 5, but, okay, I'll tell you really quick. There was a bigot, a guy who hated homosexuals. Okay?
This was in jail.
This was in
where
jail.
Where were you?
I met him in Matsqui. Okay, I'm talking real fast. I'm giving you the Cole's Note version here. Okay,
not too quick.
Well, I have to.
Let me enjoy this story.
Okay. I met this guy in prison. He was a total homophobic, and we used to argue all the time about gay rights and so forth and so on. I saying that there's nothing wrong with homosexuality. Him arguing that people that are homosexual shouldn't be allowed to teach children, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so then he left the prison. He transferred out of Matsqui into another prison called Ferndale. Over there, apparently he met a drag queen, fell in love with this drag queen, and wanted to transfer with her over to the minimum security prison, Elbow Lake on Vancouver Island, or not Elbow Lake, William Head on Vancouver Island. He transferred over there. Then she transferred over there a couple of weeks later. Then the prison decided they didn't want the two of them together, so they actually gave him a parole, which really screwed him up, because now he's outside and she's inside, and he's in love with her and she's in love with him. So he stole a high-powered speedboat and came back to try and break her out. Well, he did break her out under a hail of bullets that the guards from the towers were firing rounds at them. I don't know whether he fired back, but I believe he did. She was injured in the process of escaping, and they escaped, I think, to Seattle or Port Angeles or Bellingham or something. Anyways, they were caught a couple of weeks later in some bar in Seattle, I think.
Jerry Hanna of the Subhumans, are you allowed to go to the States?
No.
Why is that?
Well, the American government doesn't allow anybody with any kind of a criminal record into the U.S.
Were you spied on at all by the CIA? Like, did they want to get involved with you because you had done these things in Canada? Because people were saying the direct action stuff that had happened was a lot like the FLQ crisis. Mm. You know, it involved...
The CIA? You mean the American CIA?
Yeah, were they interested?
I don't think the CIA would ever have to spy on us.
Or
because
FBI.
I'm sure CSIS turned over all the documents they had to them right away. So, you know, CSIS and the RCMP Security Service did all the spying. And I'm sure they probably shared their information with the CIA and the FBI, but there's not a whole lot of reason to share all that information because there was no evidence that I was ever going to go to the States.
Jerry, has your record ever caused you any trouble at all?
Oh, many times.
In what respect?
Well, I was on the verge of getting hired at the post office for a full-time job years ago, and then she said, well, now I got to ask you this question. Do you have a criminal record? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, tell me about it. I told her about it, and then she said, oh, well, that's not too good, but let me run it by the security guy, our security specialist, because I really want to hire you because you're qualified for it, but let me check with him. She checked with him. He said, no way. And that was that. That's just one of many, many times that I've been screwed out of a job or all kinds of things.
What would it take to get rid of the record, or what would it take to get hired?
Well, you can't get rid of the record. It's always going to be on Interpol. No matter, even if I went and got a pardon from the Canadian government, it's still going to be on Interpol. Whenever I go to another country and my name is entered into the system, it's going to come up that I was charged with all these offenses.
What's going on right now with the rest of the direct actioners? Have you been in contact with... Aren't any going to come to the gig tonight, you think?
I have no idea. I doubt it. I have no idea. The only member of direct action that I ever talked to is... ex-member is Ann Hansen. And I only talked to her maybe once a year or something like that.
Did he get a chance to read her book at all?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was pretty good. I think there are parts of it that lack a little... Well, she's taken some liberties, like, for instance, the story about my tooth getting knocked out at the arrest scene. I think she lifted that from Glenn Sanford's movie Useless, where she thought that I said tooth, but in fact
really
I said
toque. Yeah, I remember that.
I said my toque fell off, and I asked the cops. One guy had a shotgun pointed at my face, and the other guy had a pistol pointed at up against my temple. And I said, toque fell off over there. Can somebody get it for me? And the guy with the shotgun said, your toque is the least of your worries.
Do you still have that toque?
I have no idea.
You
I have many toques.
Would you be given that toque back?
I think that toque is probably laying out in the forest, rotting out in the forest
did
somewhere on the side of Highway 99.
Did you get any of your stuff back after you were
some
arrested?
Stuff. Yeah,
like,
some
did they just totally go through your house? Like,
oh, they took everything. They took everything, and we had to fight to get everything back.
So did they actually keep it, though?
They keep it or destroy it. They destroy it, or of course they destroyed all the guns. They were all...
How about the records, the punk records?
Actually, I heard that there's a gun, actually one of our guns or a couple of our guns in some museum back east or something like that, but whatever. Most of the stuff was destroyed. Records and all that stuff, well, all that stuff was confiscated and actually held by the landlord of the house that we were in, and they didn't want to give it back. And then our supporters went and threatened them with legal action, and they had to give it back.
Jerry Hanna, lastly, have you kept up with anybody you met in prison? Did you meet any punkers in prison?
Yeah, I met a few. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether I want to mention names or not. I don't want to put them in any problems. But yeah, I met a few. Yeah, there was a couple of interesting folks in there. Some people that I really liked a lot.
But you were saying on the whole, the prison population didn't quite understand why you were in jail, right? They didn't understand it.
Yeah, they thought if you're gonna risk going to jail for all those years, you know, why not? Why fool around blowing up environmental things that are bad for the environment or nuclear threats, why not go and get some cash? You know, make it count. Get real, you know. That's what they thought. I mean, not all of them. There were some very politically aware people in prison, too, at that time. And they did sympathize, but a lot of guys just thought it was kind of wacko.
Is there anything going on a direct action front right now? Any movies in development at all? Like, Anne Hansen wrote that book. Does anybody want to turn a book into a movie? There's been a few Squamish 5 movies.
Yeah, I haven't heard of anything in the works. I did hear there was... Actually, Glenn Sanford was talking about the guy who did Useless, the movie Useless, documentary Useless, that your caller was phoning about earlier. Glenn was talking about doing another movie, kind of a more broader movie. With a friend of ours from back in Newfoundland, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't really.
What do you think about Carla Homolka being released today? Like, after somebody's been in jail for 14 years, and you haven't been in jail yourself.
I think she did 12 years, did she?
Yeah, maybe 12, yeah.
12. Yeah, well, I mean, she did her time. You know, I don't know that you can keep the media away. It's pretty hard to do, and maybe it's, you know, constitutionally they have the right to report on stuff, assuming that they're not interfering with your life too much. But my feeling about that is, I mean, the crime that they committed was horrible, brutal, you know, heinous, horrific crime. But she was sentenced to 12 years. The Crown had the right to appeal it if they thought it was too lenient. And I can't remember whether they did or not, but obviously if they did, they lost the appeal. She was sentenced to 12 years after all that stuff. She did the 12 years. She's out now. What do you want to do? Kill her? Like, either you let her get on with her life and be a part of the society, or you kill her. Those are your choices. You know, what are you going to do? Go lock her up again? You can't. It's unconstitutional. Then you're committing a crime like she committed. You know? Let her be, basically, I say. You know? If she screws up again, then throw her back in jail, but... You know, give her a chance.
And lastly, we have a caller here. Caller, are you there?
Hi, Nora, it's me again. I just sorry, calling again. I just had a question for Jerry.
This is Joe again. Jerry,
hi,
this
Jerry.
Is Joe.
Hi.
Hi. I was just listening to your story about what happened to you and what you guys stood all about. Sort of if you got the idea from like the Weather Underground in the '70s, like the kind of the movement that was happening in the States. Or if you guys had any connection with them at all?
Well, we didn't have any connection with the Weather Underground, but we certainly knew their, you know, their history and that. We also were aware of groups over in Europe. There was a number of groups in Europe, the Red Brigades and Action Direct, which was a French underground group, and Red Army Faction, which was often referred to as the Bayer-Meinhof Gang. We knew about those people. We'd read books about them and had read newspapers and magazines reporting on their situations. Actually, one of the things that had a huge impact on us was how members of the Red Army faction were murdered in German prisons. 5 out of 6 members were all mysteriously died on the same day, interestingly enough, separately. And only one person survived out of the 6, and she tells a story about how the guards came into her cell and tried to murder her, and the other 5 all died that day. And the authorities claim they committed suicide, but everybody maintains that it was out-and-out murder. That was one of the things that had an impact on us. Of course, what was going on in El Salvador had a huge impact. El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, it had a huge impact on us. People were being butchered on a daily basis down there. People were fighting for their lives, and we felt that it wasn't some far-off, isolated place. It was actually part of our community, you know, where these atrocities were happening. We felt like we had to do the same thing that they were doing, and that was defend ourselves.
It's still happening today. Are you still politically active today?
You know, not so much, really, other than writing songs, you know, that have political content and stuff like that.
But we should mention the Subhumans are playing the highly charged, politicized Under the Volcano.
That's correct.
Coming up.
August 7th.
An all-ages gig for the kids.
Yeah.
An all-ages gig.
Sunday,
on
August
7th. So if you can't make it tonight to the Brickyard, go to Under the Volcano on August the 7th at Cates Park in North
That's
Vancouver,
right, yeah.
British Columbia, Canada. Well, thank you for phoning in again, Joe.
Yeah, thank you, Norbert. Thank you, Jerry.
Doot-doot-a-loot-doo. Wow. Well, you're still listening to CITR FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Thank you for coming out to the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show, Jerry. I really appreciate that.
No problem.
And we're going to end now with another new Subhuman song, and then I think we're going to play an old Subhuman song, if that's okay. Because I think you got to get going, right?
I should have gone a while ago, actually.
And we're going to play... which songs... we've played two so far?
Yeah, you played two. Yeah.
Which one do you want to end with? Do you want to end with Life Sure Can Suck or I Got Religion?
That's just like deciding which baby you want to have, you know, thrown
gonna,
over the
and
ship.
And then we're going to play Oh Canada by the Subhumans.
Oh, well, then you're going to... Okay, you might as well play Life Sure Can Suck then, because that's a Brian song and Oh Canada's my song, so...
And we're going to be playing Oh Canada from the original 7-inch by the Subhumans. Did you play Oh Canada on July 1st, 1978, Jerry Hanna?
Oh Canada?
Yeah, Oh Canada.
I don't know. Like, can't be sure. It was written at that time.
This is a tradition for the Subhumans to play on Canada Day, isn't it? You did
That's correct.
A few Canada Day gigs, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, many, many, many Canada Gay gigs, yeah. We've played a lot of Canada Gay gigs, too, yes.
And actually, it's interesting you mentioned the word gay, because the Steppenwolf have a song on there, right?
Yes. On which song? On where?
On one of the albums you played, Fag, the song Fag by Steppenwolf.
It's instrumental.
Oh, okay, but still, they have the song Fag, which
is
cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting song.
And the Subhumans covered.
We didn't cover that song. We covered Move Over.
Still, it was on the same record, at least. So we're going to end now here with Life... Sure Can Suck, right?
Yes.
By the Subhumans playing tonight at the Brickyard in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Canada Day in honor of the 27th anniversary of the Subhumans. And we're going to follow it up then by Death to the Sickoid / Oh Canada by the Subhumans. We're going to play Oh Canada. And then we're also going to play a few more Subhuman songs after that with Pissed Off with Good Reason. And tonight the Subhumans are playing. You can pick up this demo and hopefully it'll be some new Subhumans product and maybe reissues out there soon enough to buy Subhumans bootlegs. I don't know if this Subhumans reissue, Pissed Off with Good Reason, is still in print or not. It was on Virgin Essential Music.
No one knows.
Right?
No one knows. But you can definitely, if you come to the show tonight or if you come to the Under the Volcano show on August 7th, you can buy new material.
And we also have two free tickets to callers 4 and 5. If you want to go see the Subhumans tonight, 604-822-247 at 604-UBC-CITR. If you want to go to the Subhumans tonight at the Brickyard, phone in to CITR. You and a guest will be able to go for free, courtesy Jerry Hanna and the Subhumans. Well, thanks so much, Jerry. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
No.
All right. Well, thanks so much, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
You better wake up. So what you gonna do?